Let's get scratching.
We got an explosive broadcast coming to you. Listen up. Sega games, just keep playing them. Sega!
We're back. It's the Segabit Swing Report Show. Live. Get ready for Sega interviews and news.
Hello and welcome to the Segabit Swingin' Report Show. We are back, and on this episode, we are going to be talking to Chris Sorrentino. There are many titles and many things that he does, so I'm going to have him come on here. I'm going to roll through some of them, and we're going to touch on them as we go through the show. So here he is.
Hey.
Here we go.
Thank you.
They liked you. It's always that same. There's a really enthusiastic woman at the top of it, too. Here, let me see if I can hear her.
Yeah.
So I brought you on for many reasons. So there's a lot of stuff that you do that I love. At the top of the list that we're featuring tonight is your art, Real, R-E-E-L, Ghostbusters. You do this art under the, is it a pseudonym or is it just like your screen name, Pizza Plasm?
It's like a pseudonym. It's just basically just an art name. I just find it easier for people to remember a weird name than Chris Sorrentino, just some generic Italian name. And there's an author named Chris Sorrentino. He wrote a few books.
Yeah, I found him.
And then, you know, the Jersey Shore show, there's a situation, Mike Sorrentino.
Yeah.
I'm here on Staten Island. I live on Staten Island, so I get asked a lot if I'm related to Jersey Shore guy.
Wow.
So sometimes you just want like a fun name. And I was like, you know what? I kind of like, ectoplasm, protoplasm, my body does run on pizza. You cut me and I bleed marinara.
Right.
So, and then I grew up with Turtles and Ghostbusters and the 80s. Pizza Plasm, it just works.
Yeah, and that's why I thought just bringing you on would be such a great fit for what our show's all about, because this is really, it's kind of just like a general Sega video gaming podcast. And growing up, I always looked at, nowadays you go, I think kids are really smart. They know what networks are. They know what like production companies are. Like kids are all about like, oh, Sony. I know all about what Sony's releasing. And I'm like, when I was a kid, I didn't know that Superman and Batman were like different companies. I didn't know that Mario couldn't be on my Sega Genesis.
Yeah, they're all like, studio savvy, these kids. And I guess because they hear about it through, they could have Spider-Man be in a Marvel movie. They worked out a deal with Sony. And like, you didn't hear, like when I was a kid, there was, oh, look, Roger Rabbit. You didn't know that Warner Brothers and Disney were hammering out deals. And Spielberg's involved bringing them together. And then they got like Betty Boop in there. That's a completely other different studio, and you're like, I'm just watching Roger Rabbit.
Nowadays kids would be like, oh, did you hear the Fleischer estate signed a deal with, and it's just like, man, like I appreciate the knowledge that's out there, but I don't know, there was something fun about not knowing much.
Ignorance is bliss.
Exactly. And so, I had those Ghostbusters VHS tapes, I had the original Ninja Turtles VHS tape, I had my Genesis video games, and they just kind of mixed together in me, in my mind, like growing up, I didn't really, it was just all part of the experience. So it was really exciting when games would be, licensed games would come to the Genesis. I'd get super, pumped. So I want to talk a little bit later briefly about the Ghostbusters video game, but running through some of the other things you do cosplay as under the name Baby Belushi. You're on Instagram.
Correct. Yeah. I bear a resemblance to John Belushi.
We're
like same exact height and body and the face is very similar. And he's somebody I've always loved and admired. And that's my era of comedy, my era of movies, like Blues Brothers and, You know what I mean? So,
right.
So I go to a lot of cons and events and even parties across the country, sometimes dressed as Jake Blue, sometimes dressed as Bluto Blitarski from Animal House.
And you do mashups sometimes too, right? Like for, I guess we should get into it. So you met a friend of mine, Jimmy Mack, who hosts Rebel Force Radio at the Chicago Star Wars Celebration, and you were dressed as Bluto, but it was with a Star Wars twist, correct?
Yeah, well, it was actually Anaheim. I went to Celebration.
Anaheim. You're right.
Chicago dressed as Jake Blues. It was the first time I ever really went to a con dressed up. Like I said, I would dress like Belushi. My friends have toga parties every year, and you know, I would do it like that, and like I would open up for this Minions of Gozer Shadow cast. We would open and do a Blues Brothers number, but I never like took it to cons or anything like that. I just wasn't into that. I always loved going to cons. I've been going to cons since I was 13 years old, but I never wanted to be a cosplay. I don't want, you know, deal with, you know, taking pictures and all that bullshit. But I was like, you know what? We're going to Chicago. It's Celebration. I was like, I'm just going to dress like Jake, and I'm going to wear a Star Wars tie. And then that's kind of how it started. So then Anaheim was the next one, the next U.S. Celebration. I was like, what am I going to do if I already did Jake? I was like, you know what? How about I do Bluto Blitarski, but it's, you know, the classic poster, you know, Jack Daniels in front of the American flag, shirt that says college. But instead, for Star Wars Celebration, I had the shirt made up to say Imperial Academy. And it was a hit. And then I bumped it to Jimmy. And I love Rebel Force Radio. I've been a listener, like, for forever. Like, on and off. I'm not, like, a big, like, I could always get, you know, time for a podcast in every week. But since, like, 2012, I've been checking in with those guys. So I saw them, and I know Jimmy's from Chicago, and I'm like, hey, man, come here. And he's like, holy shit. Like, he's just like, what is going on? And he grabbed this camera, and I chugged a beer. I was outside. So it was like, it was after Celebration, kind of. It was like people just hanging out outside. So I was just pounding beers. Yeah, there you go. I was pounding beers and smoking joints, and I was getting all jammed up. And I was like, you know what? Fuck it. Jimmy's got his camera. I was just like, Rebel Force Radio. And I chugged the beer and I crushed the can on my head. And then that led to a very tight friendship with Jimmy Mack.
Yeah. And I remember when, after Jimmy met you, he was just raving. He's like, I met this guy. It was the craziest shit. It was the best thing to happen today. We've got to find him again. I hope we can find him. And like, now here you are, like, kind of bleeding into the Rebel Force Radio community. It's just awesome.
Yeah, I love it. It's a good community too, man.
Absolutely.
It's very cool. I met a lot of cool friends. I met a lot of good friends through the just Rebel Force Radio. I love it. I always got to give them a shout out.
And, you know, like I was talking about earlier, like all this stuff's kind of connected. Like we have the Star Wars interests, the Ghostbusters interests, the video game interests. And like you look at the lineup for some of like their shows, and it's just like it's you, it's me, it's Jimmy. It's just, it's really kind of cool and interesting how all these different people from different fandoms and communities kind of came together and got to know each other.
I love it.
Yeah,
from everywhere.
Yeah,
we spread out all over the place, and
it's
I love it.
It's been so much fun, and that's, I'm just really happy that you're on. I also, honestly, I'm a huge fan of Super Live Adventure, your podcast.
Oh, thank you. Oh, my God.
Yeah, yeah, which
I appreciate that.
Wrapped its, like, ongoing run, what was that, last year?
Yeah, August of last year, we took a break to work on a, I shouldn't even be saying this, but I am, we took a break to work on a couple of different projects, one of them being a graphic novel that will be completed at some point. It's
nice.
Written by my partner on the show, also my comedy partner, John Zaluga. He's a writer for Impractical Jokers, my best friend in the world. He's writing, I'm drawing, we're cooking up the plot together. So it's a whole book that we just couldn't do a podcast and a book at the same time. But, and I also shouldn't be saying this either, Super Live Adventure might be coming back in some capacity towards the end of this year.
Wow. Yeah, you did that Christmas special, I remember.
Yeah, we did a Christmas special. So we quit the show in August, then wound up coming back in December just to do a Christmas special because we just missed getting together and doing a podcast. And then recently we've been kicking around a couple ideas and you're like, you know what? We could maybe squeeze something in.
Nice. Yeah. So, I mean, I got to say, I listen to podcasts. I don't listen to a lot of them. And I often get recommended comedy podcasts. And then they always end up being like guys who I recognize from like maybe old sketch comedy shows or like bit parts in movies. And they're in these really like stage sets. They've got the mic hanging here. Everything's filmed in vertical and horizontals to fit Instagram and
TikTok, ready to go.
And it just feels so overly produced. And then the content they put out is just like mid tier. It's just not, it's like something that doesn't match the set. And it just, it never grabs me. I mean, there's very few that do. But what I just loved about yours is it's just like, it's just two guys talking. You don't do video, it's audio only, so it leaves a lot to the imagination, which is a lot of fun.
Yeah, I agree. I like that.
And you're both visual, I guess. I don't know, like you're he's a writer, you write, right?
Yeah, I mean, not anything professionally in a while, but right. But yeah, like I said, we collaborate on this comic and like I'll write like little bits of Super Live Adventure. We'd write like an Egg Dump Soup commercial or something like that. Other than that, we would eggdumpsoup.com, by the way, is a sponsor of the show,
right?
And every episode they got a brand new commercial. But we'd come in with some stuff like that prepared, but other than that, right. we just didn't have any plan. We would just sit down in a kitchen, either right. Like his house or my house.
Yeah.
Drink a ton of beer, smoke a lot of pot, and just bullshit. And,
right.
And then take listener voicemails. And
yeah.
Wind up getting completely insane. Like guys would call and just fart, and people just call. There was characters. There's a robot version of a person. It was a crazy. It was a really crazy experience.
Yeah, it's like stream of consciousness conversation, but there's always like there's topics that come back, occasionally on episodes, but it's just there's very few podcasts like that where it's on the fly sort of stuff where you're not bringing in guests really occasionally, but you're not like tonight we're going to talk about, and also I appreciate that it's not like we're going to talk about politics. Just because I feel like some shows guys are like, I gotta like educate some, young adults on
we
the ways of the world.
We kind of steered away from that. The closest we got into it was we actually got a shot clock that was we'd set it for a minute. And when somebody was feeling dark and heavy and they were like, I have to rant, set the shot clock. And no matter what you were in the middle of, when it goes off, you have to shut the fuck up and change the topic.
Yeah. I mean, the closest I came to a political podcast on our show was we were recording on January 6th. And,
oh, no way.
And we were like talking about video games and stuff. And then I was like also checking the news and I'm like, cool. Anyway, so, Game Gear, man. But yeah, so let's talk about the real Ghostbusters project. So I'm going to bring up here. This is the website you have for the project. It's where a lot of the art lives right now.
Yes,
why don't you tell me how did this project begin? What was the first?
All right. Before I do that, before anybody breaks my balls, that's the recreation of the movie poster. Winston's not in the original poster.
Right.
If Winston could have been, I would have been more than happy with it. I'm just trying to recreate that. I get a lot of shit online from people. Two things, either like this is AI or that I'm a horrible racist because I did not include Winston on the poster. Like, I do plenty of pieces of art with Winston. I'm just trying to faithfully recreate scenes from the movie in the style of the cartoon. So that's basically what I do is, like I just said, scenes of the movie in the style of the cartoon, but it's looks like a still from like an episode of the cartoon,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to just art, just fan art.
Right.
And, you know what, Ghostbusters is something I've loved since the moment I saw it at 5 years old, and the cartoon a couple of years later really took a hold of me, the toys, and I was obsessed for a long time. I didn't even know there was other Ghostbusters fans. I was just like this, just obsessed, and I would read the role-playing game from West End Games. I would just read the supplements and like any of the Now comic books, because there wasn't that much Ghostbusters merch out there.
Right.
But there was this, when Ghostbusters 2 finally rolled around, there was this adaptation from Now Comics where it was the real Ghostbusters in the movie Ghostbusters 2. But it was the comic book version. It wasn't drawn like the cartoon. It was drawn like, which great artwork. Is
right.
John Tobin, the co-creator of Mortal Kombat. Just weird.
Yeah.
But, maybe is his name Tobin? Something like that. I might have screwed up his name. I have been mixed up with Tobin Spirit Guide. But I always wanted to see what the first movie would look like as a cartoon. I always wanted to see, you know, Dana Barrett. And,
right.
You know what I mean? And just Gozer and like what that all would look like. So I just started doing this like just for the heck of it in between like jobs and stuff, just to cleanse my palate. Cause I do a lot of freelance art for, you know, other people and, you know, businesses and productions and stuff like that, that, you know, I appreciate the work and I love it. I put all everything of myself into my art,
right.
But, you know, sometimes I need a break from drawing what other people want and I draw what I want. And this is what that was. And then I was like, you know what, let me just start rolling with it. And I eventually plan on putting together a book, you know, compiling it almost like a, I had a weird idea of doing it almost like this, like weird movie storybook,
you know what I mean?
Like old school, but like that this was actually in production, like somebody found like this abandoned, like cartoon studio in Italy or somewhere, you know what I mean? Just shut down. And they found this and they were like, oh my God, this movie was in production, and like putting it out under a fake name. And
right.
And so even like this piece right here, I incorporated the toys. So
right.
I put like the toy zombie in as the cab driver zombie, which I thought was a weird, fun idea. But I thought it would be cool to like incorporate the toys also before that was really like a huge thing.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like it started, Afterlife did it. You know, they put the bug eye ghost.
They did, and they almost put Bad to the Bone in. Did you see that?
I saw that.
And I was like, oh man, and it looked so creepy.
Right? What a missed opportunity. Man, if anything that new Ghostbusters movie was lacking, it was ghosts.
Right.
They had a whole facility for ghosts. Fill it with ghosts.
Yeah.
Just have a bunch of ghosts running all over the place.
There were like maybe four or five in there, which were, I liked the ghosts that we did get, but I feel like they should have doubled it, tripled it maybe.
Agreed.
Yeah. I love this one. Let me know, like, what's your process on this? Like, what applications or programs do you use?
Just two, Procreate and Photoshop.
Wow.
I do most of my art, the line drawing on Procreate. Just, you know, I'll actually grab the movie still and kind of draw over it. I'll take stills from the cartoon to make sure I'm matching the style, the colors, right. You know what I mean? Like everything has a very distinct look, and it's hard. This is the hardest part of it. It's hard to nail a character's likeness, because if you actually break down the cartoon, episodes are done by different studios and they have different looks. So some episodes have like more of an anime look.
Mm-hmm.
Some are just kind of like, look junky. Like some episodes look like shit.
They do.
I'm not even gonna. Yeah, and some look gorgeous. There's probably like five different studios working on this, like, you know, under Deke working for them. They get like subcontracted, I guess. And you could see notable differences between episodes.
Mm-hmm.
So to kind of pinpoint that, you know, median version that you'd recognize is that character without questioning, you know what I mean? Or without right. like, is that Egon? Like that's the quintessential Egon. You know what he looks like, but it's a weird, it's almost like a AI process. Like I have to filter in my head all these different versions and try to come out with the best one. It's
right.
very bizarre. It's very, very hard.
And I mean, when you do the afterlife stuff, like I'm trying to see if Phoebe's on here. I know she's in the store, so I'll go there. But like when you're doing Phoebe, you almost have to like reimagine her because she's cartoon yeah. Egon's granddaughter, not
yeah.
movie Egon's granddaughter. So she looks very different, but it works, which I Thank think is you. Really interesting.
Yeah, I had to incorporate like the chin, the lips, of course, the hair, the curl in the front, but keep it softer, make it a little more, you know, feminine and, you know, and just and younger.
Uh-huh.
So it's a weird balance. It's a weird line you got to walk with it. And it's a lot of trial and error. You just work with it. That's what I love about working digitally now. So I've been drawing forever. Always, you know, pencil to paper. That's what I lived by.
Mm-hmm.
And drawing digitally now, like, it's so much. It's so much better. Light years beyond the process.
Right, right. It's,
I originally did it just so I could draw on the go, so I could just get more work done.
Yeah.
And I was drawing and scanning it into Photoshop anyway, and then doing touch-ups, and I was like, what the fuck am I doing? Am I a jerk off? I'll just draw digitally, and I don't have to do this whole process. And I didn't even think of the fact that like you don't have to erase something 17 times. You just hit back,
right?
You know,
yeah.
And you could save if you liked the way something looked, and you inked it, and it looked like shit. You're like, oh, I just inked my pencils. I have to redraw this. Now I save files of everything. It's a beautiful way to work.
Absolutely.
So each character, everything you'll see, each color is basically a separate layer.
Mm-hmm.
So I can keep playing with that, you know what I mean, till it works. Sometimes
right.
I'll apply filters to age it, you know what I mean, and like blurs and stuff like that. That sometimes that color that looked beautiful before you fucked with it, before you tweaked it, now looks like garbage. So I can just take that one layer and mess with it. I don't have to take apart a whole piece of art. It's a godsend. I love
it. So let me ask you, like, have there, as the process goes along, I have to imagine that you're learning new like tricks to imitate the cell animation process, including mm-hmm. the downsides to it, I'd imagine.
Yes.
So are there any that come to mind that you've noticed in cell animation? They're like, well, I got to tweak this to replicate that.
Oh yeah, definitely. There's blurs. There's everything like from the 80s. Any kind of like still, it looks like it's taken off of VHS tape.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like,
right, right.
Like it just will. Like you just grab go grab a still of Voltron. You
right.
know what I mean? Like, it's going to have that look, and Ghostbusters will have that look. So, excuse me, there's like a cocktail of filters and blurs that, like a secret, you know, secret blend of spices.
Right.
Herbs and spices that I apply to these things. And
yeah.
some of them differ between pieces. So, like, this is the afterlife. It looks more anime because it's more like of an updated, like, this would have been done like maybe, you know what I mean, late 90s.
Right,
if,
right.
If the real Ghostbusters was a movie in the mid 80s, you know what I mean? Like,
right.
So I kind of try to even update that. It's very, it's mad. It's crazy.
Yeah.
There's a lot
yeah.
of craziness behind it all that people never know.
Yeah, I mean,
I have
a pretty extensive collection of like animation cells, and some things I really notice are like when they start to layer on too many characters, the back mm-hmm. layer is like more subdued in color when I'm watching the show, and so I'll remove all the layers and just look at that like fresh that fresh layer that was in the back, and I'm like, oh, so this character was not like painted poorly. It's that they layered like three or four animation cells on top of them. So like when they photographed it, it just the colors weren't correct.
Yeah, and I never realized that. Yeah, you're right.
And it's funny because now you'll see shows. There was a time when they were adding a little slight backdrop to like digital animation. I don't know if you've ever noticed that, but they would.
Yeah,
they go in there just because it looked too clean. Like I remember the first digitally inked Simpsons episode looked awful. It was the tennis one, I think, and it was a test episode, and everything looked too bright and yellow. And they realized that white does not exist in The Simpsons. It's like an off-white.
Yeah, it's, same thing with Ghostbusters. I've done that, color in the Ecto-1. Ecto-1's not white. The Ecto-1's like a weird, very light pink.
Right.
Honestly.
That's true.
But it reminds me of like Rob Coleman doing the prequel special effects, the Star Wars prequel special effects. And they had the Yoda... digital Yoda, something was off about him, and they had to add the rubber bounce of the ears from the puppet because just a flawless digital Yoda just didn't sit well.
I remember that.
Make it rubbery.
They were saying like, "Why is his mouth doing this?" And it's like, "Well, I think that's Frank Oz's hand, like doing that."
Yeah.
So they would actually have to like, which is not natural. Like no one's like ah.
Yeah, it's Muppet Mouth.
It is Nobody Muppet has real Mouth. Muppet Mouth. Yeah, I was diagnosed with Muppet Mouth, so we should probably not get into that. That's wild. So as I mentioned, I have a second camera, so I might as well utilize it. So I just wanted to bring out some of the weird cells I have. So
I love that, by the way.
And just let me, like, this is kind of a weird idea I had. So, like, look at some of these. Like, I'm going to find some of the shitty ones. This one's kind of bad. Like, you know, you're showing off some really great stuff, but, like, have you ever considered taking a bad frame from the movie and doing it almost as though it's, like, a cell that...
I have.
Yeah.
Kind of, but the thing is... Oh, I'm going to sound so shitty saying this, but... like in these fan groups and stuff, it's like I show off a lot of my stuff through fan groups and online, and it gets me a lot of business, sells my print. So some of these people don't have the capacity to understand what I'm doing, and it wouldn't go over well.
Be too meta.
Too meta. We just go over too many heads. Where I know, like, you know, guys like me and you would really appreciate it.
Here's my favorite shitty Back to the Future cell I have. It's a wheelchair. Isn't that awful?
Is that Jules or Vern? I never remember the difference. Is he the wiener kid? You ever
I
see
think
that
the kid
clip?
Pointing to his dick? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's the one, right?
Yeah. It's
the animated version of Wiener Boy. Back to the Wiener Boy.
I got these in like a bulk, you know, through the Animation Legends before they closed down. But this is a great
that's
one.
Cool, yeah, that's very cool.
Clara, you know,
yeah.
But the best one I have is I really like this one.
That's cool. It's like that's really cool.
Chariot with these must be like robots because they're Sonic the Hedgehogging.
Yeah, right they're there. Very Sonic the Hedgehogging. You got Marty McMullet.
Yeah.
In them, that is killer right there.
That's a cool one.
You know what's weird about that show? Christopher Lloyd would come in and do intros and outros, but he wasn't like the voice. I think of
he wasn't. Bob. It was Dan Castellaneta.
No way, Dan Castellaneta strikes again.
Yeah,
unsung hero of those like '90s cartoons, late '80s cartoons. Oh, like Aladdin and everything. He's like in everything.
I know. He has the dream job as Homer, but he's also like the double for so many well-known ones. Yeah. I love this one.
Is that a Tannen?
That's
that
like... Confederate Biff Tannen yelling at Marty and yelling at a dog, which is great. Einstein's there.
It's slavery, Marty.
And I love this one. It's It's like Pirate Marty.
Oh, that's fucking great. That looks very Jake and the Neverlands Pirates.
But yeah. Oh, here's one. Like, I always thought this one looked like Andor Marty if he was on, like, in Star Wars, a dark, gritty Star Wars.
Yeah, that's
and
pretty cool.
And it's actually, it's, you can take his head off.
Oh, that's cool.
Or it's
that's
like, really... Marty, you'll cease to exist. And it's like, no. Yeah, yeah. But I think, yeah, Tom Wilson, it says in the chat here, voiced Biff. So he came back.
Oh, really? Okay, cool. Very,
very
cool.
He's kind of like the C-3PO, where it's like he'll do it no matter what.
Yeah, Anthony Daniels of the Back to the Future. Wow, yeah, look at that. I guess that's the close-up of that previous shot.
Yeah, and then there's some Ewoks ones in here, too. I'm not going to go through them all, but just like weird random Ewok stuff.
Wow.
I love
the Ewoks had cool designs.
The Duloks, the drawings on these, it's almost like...
Yeah, the bad guys, yeah.
They didn't quite let go of their, like, Fritz the Cat aesthetic, like the animators. Yeah. They're still like, oh, let's get freaky with these guys.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. It's such a cool design. I love the colors. It's very, like, monster-y, Scooby-Doo monster colors. Like, I like it.
But, yeah, and then going back to what you were saying with, like, you know, should you even consider going in and picking a bad frame? Looking through these, like, a lot of them were actually pretty cool. Like, they're not iconic scenes, but they're interesting sort of portrayals of the character. Like, their eyes are open, they're interacting with something. It looks cool, except for the wheelchair one.
Yeah, that's pretty rough.
So when you're going through, like, do you... Like, the one I saw was the librarian, but the not the ghost one, but, like, the living librarian, but it's just her back. Mm-hmm. And I know that's an iconic scene with the cards coming up, but do you look through... Do you actually, like, have the whole movie there and you just kind of go through and find things that look good to you? Or do you look for iconic shots or a mix?
At first, it was iconic shots. And then when I said I'm going to do it maybe as a storybook, I started looking at it in a narrative way. Like I was editing almost like my own storybook of like, well, I think I should include this scene and then this scene. Just like what would be a good narrative to follow, but also be aesthetically pleasing too, you know? So there's something where you could kind of pick it up and almost follow a story. You know,
if
I didn't want to put all the text in Italian just because I thought it was funny.
That would be great.
It's going to happen.
Oh, my God.
It's real weird.
I don't know if you've ever seen the book. It's Star Wars Frames by George Lucas. It was one of the last projects he did before he sold to Disney.
No, I don't know about that.
It's an art book. The original one was insanely expensive, and then they released a much cheaper one. And by cheaper, I mean it was still like $100 or something. But they're two massive books, at least the cheap version, one for the prequels and one for the original trilogy. And George went through the film frame by frame and selected, I don't know how many per film, maybe 50 or 100 or 500, something like that. But it's him just picking stills that he thinks look aesthetically interesting or pleasing. And
that's cool.
You know, you might think, oh, he's going to pick the iconic shots that I see on the back of the VHS box or stuff. But no, it's like... Yeah. He likes like a weird blurry shot where like there's a stormtrooper here and a laser bolt coming right through the screen. You never see that on like any merch, but for George, he was going through and he's like, this is iconic or this looks cool to me.
That's wild. And it's completely, and he, you know, you're looking at it, he's looking at it from a completely different lens than we're looking at it. You know what I mean? Like everything, like when you think of Star Wars immediately, I bet you it's something that's been like a Topps trading card or a picture from a book. Or you know what I mean, like like you said, like a VHS cover or picture on the back. That's like the immediate thing you conjure up. But for George, God, who the hell knows what the hell his immediate thought of Star Wars is? I'd love to know.
It's got, you'd be like, what's Star Wars to you, George? He's like, oh, it's when Jar Jar grabbed Qui-Gon and they fell. You're like that? Yeah, them just falling. It's great.
Squeeze me.
You think he's going to see it right now while it's in theaters? That would be...
I hope so. I hope so.
He wears like a... I guess he can't wear a fake beard. He wears a beard over his beard, maybe. I don't know.
Like a big Grizzly Adams beard.
Yeah, he's just sitting
there.
Still
got the flannel. It's like...
God. And he does like a selfie. He's like, hey, guess where I am? Posts it up on his private Instagram account. So I had one other bit here regarding animation. I know you saw this when I was testing the connections earlier. So I just want to run through three of them are pretty obscure. One of them is not so much. But I just want your take on how they adapted film to animation, specifically like the character designs on these. This first one is Dumb and Dumber, the animated series, which I should note, I forgot which year it is, 93 or 94, but Jim Carrey had The Mask, Dumb and Dumber, and Ace Ventura all in one year.
It had to be, had to have been 1994, because I know Alamo is showing Dumb and Dumber as a 30th anniversary thing.
Okay. And then they did animated series for all three of those from different studios with different guys doing Jim Carrey in all three of them.
Oh, really?
Isn't that weird?
I didn't know that.
Different voice actors. So it's like, let's bring this guy in for The Mask, this guy in for Harry. But what are your thoughts just looking at this and what you remember from the series? Like,
oh, my God. Well, you know what? I'd love to hear the voices again. I'd love to hear all three Jim Carreys and see all three. You know, I'd love to hear Ace and Lloyd and The Mask with Stanley.
Oh, that's a Comic-Con panel, you know, just waiting to happen.
Oh, my
God. For the anniversary, they could be like, we brought the three Jim Carrey voices. And then Jim Carrey takes the stage.
Yes!
Or
Jim Carrey's the moderator.
Yeah, Jim Carrey moderates the three Jim Carrey animated voice actors. That'd be great.
Called Jim and Jimmer or something.
Yeah.
No, I really enjoy, I don't remember watching like this regularly.
Uh-huh.
Like, I don't think it was like one of these, because I was already like a little older by 94 anyway. I was born in 78, so like I remember like that, you know, the Jim Carrey, the Lloyd Christmas is perfect. The Harry, I don't know. It's like, you know, it's a lot of liberties taken.
It's a little bit of like Barney Rubble and Peter Griffin.
Okay, yeah.
He's got the ball chin.
Smashing the galaxy. Yeah. Yeah. Oh,
but
God,
it's the show must have been extremely, I mean, dumbed down even more for kids. Like, there probably was zero gross out, zero, you know, I very much doubt the humor carried over.
No farts or anything. I wonder who like the like antagonist was. Like, who they like repeatedly like had like tried to, you know, tried to foil Lloyd and Harry's plans every week. Like, who's
just
you
been
know?
Like with the Three Stooges, where it's just like the same, like different people every time.
Yeah,
you throw them into different situations,
and they just—it's like they're the original Impractical Jokers. They're messing with each other, and everybody else around is changing.
This next one, it's not obscure. It's Beetlejuice, which is actually seeing a sequel this year. This one, I mean, just from a writing perspective, it's really weird that they're best friends here when he was trying to like make her a child bride in the movie.
Yeah, they took a lot of liberties with this one. It was always weird that the Maitlands were gone.
Yeah,
you know, the Gene Davis and Alec Baldwin, the Maitland character, Barbara and Adam. Oh my God, I can't believe I remembered that. I love the designs on these. I loved how weird this fucking thing would get. And you know, it's crazy to tie this into Sega Genesis. One of my favorite games, Decap Attack, starring Chuck Head. It always, the style of that game reminded me of the style of this cartoon so much that like when I was younger, I thought they were like synonymous in a weird way. Like I thought they were kind of like, you know, like a cross thing or something, you know?
Right.
Yeah. It just it looked like it just came right out of this cartoon. Like, he could have been one of his friends, like Beetlejuice's friend. You know, when you see, like, all those, the supporting cast, it's like, the guys who, the people who live, like, Beetlejuice's neighbors, like a spider lady and, like,
weightlifting
skeleton.
Yeah, like a French skeleton who's into, like, aerobics.
Yeah, he had, like, a big French mustache.
And, right. And the joke was he could never put on muscle. Because he was a skeleton.
Yeah. It was like a guy who owned that dog forgot what that guy looked like.
Yeah, wasn't he
Texan or something?
He looked like the monster guy from Looney Tunes a little
bit.
Oh,
the big hairy guy.
Behemoth or whatever it's called. I don't know. Yeah. All right, this next one is Camp Candy. Do you remember Camp Candy?
I remember Camp Candy. Like at Camp Candy.
So this was not based on any movie, to my knowledge, was it?
No, it's just like I think they took the concept. Okay, so in the '80s was a weird time with cartoons where not only did they adapt films, they took like people and were like, you know what? We're gonna give you a cartoon. They had like a weird like Rick Moranis Monster High show where like Rick Moranis was the principal, and then they gave John Candy this, and then like let's give Louis Anderson, that might have been more 90s, but like
yeah,
let's give
Louis
Anderson a whole thing, and like let's give Howie Mandel a whole thing. It's just like not based on anything. It's just like just go nuts with it. And I think Camp Candy was one of those things where it's just like somebody probably, you know, I don't somehow came up with an idea to like, all right, let's do a I gotta assume why you come up with a camp idea. I mean, I love Salute Your Shorts, I love Red Hot American Summer, I love Meatballs, all four of them. Like, I'm a summer camp guy. I love summer camp. I don't know why. I just think it's a funny setting because you could throw like any group of kids and like, you know, you got nerd and fat kid,
right?
The tough kid, you know what I mean? Like you throw all those dynamics together. There you go. That's definitely the nerd. And like
they look like the Burger King Kids Club, if I'm honest.
Kind of do. They one wheelchair short of a Burger King.
Well, he's I don't know. He could be on his knees, maybe a little kid. I don't know.
His handicap is he has a huge hat.
the fancy girl.
I think somebody was like, let's do this but attach somebody to it. They brought it to John Candy,
right?
And he said yeah, because I can't imagine John Candy saying like, you know what, I should do a cartoon, let me get a studio to make a cartoon about me being a camp counselor. Like, hey, I think if Candy said no, they would have went to, you know, Camp Godfrey.
Hello kids,
yeah,
now line up over there.
Oh my god, this last one's really weird. Have you ever heard of this one, Little Shop?
Yeah, they're kids, and like it's an interesting design choice.
It's very interesting. I watched the first episode last week, and all the sets, the whole show looks like this. Like it's blue background with then nothing's painted really. It's just like shapes calling out. Like look at that. It's there.
Yeah. It's very, it kind of, you ever see that like Fantasia 2000 segment of Bohemian Rhapsody?
Yeah.
Segment? It's like very, it looks like that. And I think the Audrey Chu is the same voice, that guy who's, I forgot his name. He's also the singer from the Bus Boys who do the song from Ghostbusters. Cleaning
oh, really?
Up the town.
Yeah. And here's Rick Moranis up here, like as a kid.
Yeah.
Like they totally retooled it.
Yeah, they made them kids.
They made them kids. No one dies.
I guess that's Audrey with
this
the
is,
dark hair.
I guess that's Audrey. And then these are the singers, the three women from the movie. They're
okay,
flowers.
Yeah. It's like Mr. Mushnick looks like a Mr. Mushnick.
Yeah, and then he would just kind of be like, I'm going to cause a little trouble, but it's like, I'm not going to kill anyone.
No.
And it's like,
no,
you can't. Yeah.
I like the eyes on the stalks. That's an interesting and bold choice.
Yeah, they did a lot with them. Like they'd bring him down,
that's
and he'd like
cool.
have it bent down, and they'd be here if he wants to like change his face. But
yeah,
just like just this such a weird cross section of live action film or notable actors getting cartoons.
Okay, speaking of Jar Jar, Audrey too does look kind of Jar Jar.
Oh. Yeah, it is. Yeah. Yeah, I've noticed that. Like, you look at some of the Jar Jar art, and he looks very different when he brings his eyes down versus when he puts them up or, like, starts to stretch them out a little bit.
I like that, though.
You like Jar Jar.
It's very... I like the expressiveness. I don't hate Jar Jar. I do not hate Jar Jar, I have to say.
Yeah.
I don't love Jar Jar, but Jar Jar doesn't make me want to, like, kill myself like some people go on and on about. I've seen worse.
Yeah.
I've definitely seen worse.
Yeah. Yeah.
I know worse. I know worse people than Jar Jar.
You know, like, worse people, like, in life.
Yeah, in life.
Well, yeah, I definitely
do. On a daily basis, where I was like, you know what? If you were Jar Jar Binks, I'd like you a lot more.
He's dependable. He's a nice guy. I think he's just kind of a fuck-up, but...
He's a fuck-up, but he means you no harm.
Yeah.
He's not the guy who's going to fuck you over on purpose.
That's true.
Jar Jar's not going to do that.
No. Well, moving on to video games. So I wanted to know...
Yes, sir.
What video game consoles and games did you grow up with?
I was a big... I had a 2600 as a kid. I wasn't a huge 2600 guy, though. Like, I had, like, a couple of games. I had Ghostbusters, and you know what I mean? Like, I wasn't, like... My dad probably played it more than me. I kind of was, like, arcade game to... We used to have a great place in New Jersey, right across the bridge, called Razzmatazz. It was like a Chuck E. Cheese or a Showtime pizza type of thing. And it was fucking, it was just bananas. Like, if you got invited to a birthday at Razzmatazz, like, you had the best weekend ever. I had a birthday at Razzmatazz. It was
nice.
The best. And then once NES kind of hit the scene, like, 85... I was like 7 by then. I probably got an NES like 9, and then the Game Boy when that hit. I think that was like 89. So like I was huge with that, and I didn't have a Master System, but I knew a kid that did, and I was always envious of that Ghostbusters game. That Master System game was just bonkers, man. That was a fun game, and like that's what like got me so upset about the Nintendo games. It wasn't the Master System game.
Yeah, that Nintendo or the Master System one too. It had more control options, I think, or the difficulty was a lot easier. Yeah, yeah.
The Marshmallow Man would just appear in front of a building, and you had to fight him, and he'd like try to stomp you out. And
yeah,
like,
yeah,
it was crazy.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, please, please give me that.
did you have any like favorite games based on movies or cartoons, or did you stick more to the like? Stuff that originated as a video game. You
know yeah, I mean? Well, for NES, it was more, you know, like Nintendo produced games.
Yeah,
you know, Super Mario Brothers, Legend of Zelda. I'm a Legend of Zelda freak. You know, anything like that, like even like Excite Bike. I remember, I loved that. I just love building my own track, stuff like that. But all the licensed stuff I did get, and it was all just garbage. Like
yeah.
I said, Ghostbusters, Ghostbusters 2, Turtles, which I've gone back to play Turtles, and I'm fond of it.
Yeah, yeah.
But I wouldn't say it's amazing. But and then, like, you know, they had the Turtles 2 arcade game, so I guess that's, like, you know, like the NES port. It was, like,
right.
You know, chunky as fuck. But you know, I still dug on it. It wasn't really till... you know what? I like the Turtles game and the Spider-Man game a lot for the Game Boy.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Call it a Foot Clan and Amazing Spider-Man. And then it wasn't really till... pick up the mic a little more. Sorry. It wasn't really until, like, the Sega Genesis that I really started digging some of the licensed stuff, like movie stuff. Like,
yeah, yeah.
That yeah. Ghostbusters game is just... killer.
It's so weird, but it's so good. Like,
it's so weird.
But, big head, little body, not based on the cartoons.
No.
Came out in 1990, but it's very much steeped in the first film. Like, it's almost like they didn't see the sequel.
Yes. Yeah, Winston's not even in the game. Except
right.
for that, you know, that homemade...
Yeah,
special
yeah.
edition. I have a copy of, by the way.
Yeah, we had him on the show, and we talked through. Honestly, like, there was so much shit he was throwing at me that I was just like nodding, and I'm like, that's how you hack a game, sure, yeah, like it's,
yeah,
it's,
yeah. Hey.
The stuff that guy knows how to do is just insane.
Yeah, and you know what? I'm just gonna throw this out there. I'm sorry to anyone who hasn't bought it yet. That guy sells it. Dirt cheap, and he shouldn't. He should double his fucking prices. He sells it for the price of just a video game. Like, I think I paid like 50, 60 bucks for.
Right.
I'm like, yo, hey, buddy, I'm sorry. I'm sorry to everybody else. I would have paid you $150 for that. I'm not even
right. He can just call it like, an art piece, and then he can,
yeah,
you know,
it's amazing. He added like a save battery and everything. Like the guy went all in, and he's only charged $60. Like,
and there's like Vigo mode, and there's all these like secrets. Yeah.
But so that game I dug. I dug Spider-Man for the Sega Genesis, the X-Men game for the Sega Genesis. I even liked Jurassic Park. It wasn't, you know, it was a tedious game, but it wasn't the worst.
Did you ever play Dick Tracy?
No.
Check it out.
Yeah?
It's cool.
I never. Yeah?
Yeah, it's from, or at least based off of Shinobi, if you've ever played those games.
Oh, yeah. I know Shinobi, yeah.
So you're on the you're like walking on the front and shooting and punching and shooting, but then in the background, it's like a shooting gallery. So it's like a second way of playing the game. And you turn around and you Tommy gun the background. And you go...
So you'll be like guys popping up and stuff.
Yeah, yeah. So you're playing on two planes. It's pretty cool.
That's cool. Yeah, I would think... It's weird I never played that because I love Dick Tracy. That 1990 movie.
Yeah, that... I'm like... I'm a huge Dick Tracy fan. I actually dressed as the kid when I was a kid. And my dad was Dick Tracy. Yeah. I like dirtied my face up and wore like the newsy hat.
That's cool. See, yeah. I was like obsessed with the toys, the Playmate toys.
Oh.
And I had everything. And then there was the always the rumor, like the blank figure. I'm sure you know the whole history of the blank figure, right? So it was always rumors. Like kids at school would be like, yeah, I saw the blank hanging at Toys R Us on Richmond Avenue. You'd be like, no way. And like you'd believe these kids' lies. And like, so this thing was forever like, it's,
yeah.
One of my like, last thoughts as I'm dying, I'll be like, the blank. I could have had it if I went to that Toys R Us today.
They did a similar thing with Dr. Claw with the.
I saw his face. Like some kid would always be like, yeah, I saw his face.
And I'm like, where? And it's like, at Target. And you know what? I remember as a kid, I went to Target and hanging from the pegs was the Dr. Claw action figure, but they, you know, covered his face. So you had to buy it to see his face. And some kid ripped it off the bubble just to see his face. So it was almost like the equivalent of like the Middle Ages where they would just hang the body in the square. So kids would go to the Target aisle. They would look at his face and move on. No one would buy it. They'd be like, I saw his face.
Why are you going to buy it once you see his face?
Yeah.
You
know, and like, he looked like like this. That's it.
Oh, really?
That's all he looked. He just looked angry with like the weirdest... Like, weirdest mouth, and that was it. And it's like, oh, it's kind of disappointing, but...
That cat always on his lap.
Yeah.
Dropping
I don't know if the cat came with it. I don't even know if he could sit. That would suck. I don't think he could sit.
Well, it's his whole thing is sitting. Yeah. Sitting in that chair, turning around with a cat, petting.
Yeah. Yeah, I have the action figures for Snoke and for Queen Amidala, and they can't sit. And I'm like, they sit for most of the movies.
That's their thing. Especially Snoke.
Yeah. I don't know what they were thinking. And they came with thrones. You could buy their throne, but they couldn't sit on the throne. They'd sit and their legs would be like out.
Yeah, straight out.
Didn't work. But yeah, so going back to that Ghostbusters game, though, it was kind of wild because 1990, it comes out after the sequel, but it takes place just after... the first movie, and it got me thinking about like how weird Ghostbusters canon kind of is.
Just whatever.
Going back to the cartoon, there's that episode where they are making a movie about the events from the first Ghostbusters, and it turns out that the Ghostbusters movie is based on the events, right?
That's why they're the real Ghostbusters.
Exactly.
Yeah, they go and they sit there like, Murray, Aykroyd, and Ramis. That sounds like a law firm. That's one of the jokes of the show. I was like, that's a great fucking joke.
Yeah.
The episode it's from season one, I believe. It's called Take Two. Mm-hmm. And yeah, they're actually hired to like be consultants as they're filming the movie. And it's pretty cool because it's actually like they have a firehouse rebuilt on a set.
Right.
And it's very much like what they just did with the last Ghostbusters movie.
Which is really weird.
Yeah.
And it's like, and then I go down the rabbit hole where I'm like, well, then in the animated universe, Extreme Ghostbusters happens, but then they make Afterlife, and Egon's not in it, but Egon's the only acting Ghostbuster. So it's almost like, did the filmmakers not get the rights to Egon, so they killed him off in the movies? You know, it's like, so is in the Extreme Ghostbusters universe, like, he's kind of pissed that they're making Frozen Empire? You know, like, is there some animosity there? He's like, what the fuck? Who's Gary Gruberson? Like,
why would they kill me off?
Yeah.
Why would they not have my sweet ponytail?
And that's why I get such a kick out of people going, well, is the video game canon? I'm like, this whole thing's just
none
a
of
mess.
It's fucking. Yeah. Yeah. None of it. None of it holds together. It's, yeah, it's loose as fuck. I think that's kind of beautiful if you view it after, like, after every single movie, like, just everything's kind of reset. Mm-hmm. some of it kind of follows, but some of it verges off into something else. And, yeah, like, just that whole theory. Did you hear the whole Ghostbusters 2 theory?
That
they're they died on top of the Shandor building.
Right.
So Ghostbusters 2 is kind of like that's why it's like the same movie over and over, like beat by beat. Like, they're trying to, like, get out of purgatory and move to the afterlife.
That's dark.
Yeah.
That's weird.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, yeah, they're saying in the chat, we just witnessed a miracle. So that was something else. Yeah,
it happened.
I'm afraid to go longer because then it'll fuck up again.
Yeah, I don't know what that was. It was really bizarre.
Maybe it was, I don't know, a ghost or something. The last bit I just wanted to move into was talking about Ghostbusters fandom in general. I know you costume. Are you in any regional groups?
Yeah, I'm in the New York City Ghostbusters.
Hmm.
Yeah. I think since 2015. Before I mentioned I would open for a Minions of Gozer Shadowcast.
Uh-huh.
And do the Blues Brothers act. My Elwood was the president, the guy who's the president of the New York City Ghostbusters now, Ryan Espen.
Uh-huh.
He's how I got involved. He would also play Venkman in the Ghostbusters Shadowcast.
Oh, wow.
So it was like, a Rocky Horror Picture Show Shadowcast. If anybody's ever been to something like that, it's like the movie's being shown, but people are also up in front of the screen, like, reenacting it. And, like, they'd have, like, Christmas lights as, like, throwers, and they'd shoot silly spray, and you'd throw marshmallows, and, like, you know, they're in the Walter Peck, the mayor's office scene, like, somebody would pants them, and you just had, like, sheer stockings on, like, it almost had like a Ken doll, no dick.
Right.
Yeah, it was like crazy. The Ecto-1 was just like a cardboard suit. Somebody would run around the audience and it had lights on it. It was a wild show. It was called Minions of Gozer, and Ryan Espen played Venkman. You know, he's tall, lanky, great guy, really great guy, good friend. And, you know, and then we would open the show together as Jake and Elwood. And he got me involved in the New York City Ghostbusters. At the time, he wasn't a president. He was just part of a group. He was like, oh, why don't you come hang out? And, you know, hung out with those dudes, had a good time. And, you know, beer and pizza, but, you know, Ghostbusters. And I was like, yeah, I could fit in with this. So, yeah, I've been a member for, wow, a long time now. We do a lot of charity stuff. Since getting older and having kids and stuff, kind of like, I'm less active in, like, the going out there and doing a slime lab with the kids type of thing, you know, but I'm more behind the scenes doing, like, a lot of the artwork.
Okay.
I just designed for the glue bottles that they use in the slime labs, like an Elmer's glue, but it's like, you know, Gozer's glue, and instead of like the cow, it's a terror dog. It's pretty cool. Yeah. I just did a print for a Comic-Con for them that they were, and like they got this big backdrop you can take pictures in front of. It's like, it's artwork I did of, like, you know, the Ghostbusters doing kind of like a like the real Ghostbusters take on the music video.
Right. Yeah, I love that one.
You know, coming down Times Square.
Right. Right.
That thing. But I didn't draw a what's his name in it? Ray Parker Jr.
Right.
Because I just thought it would have been too confusing to people.
But that scene is now canon to the Ghostbusters universe because it was in Frozen Empire, which is the weirdest thing.
Yeah, like
the toys are canon to the movies now.
Yeah, that's the same. So
they made a cartoon show in the Ghostbusters universe, but the Ghostbusters movie is a fake movie in the cartoon universe. So it's like a snake
eating its own tail.
So tell me, so these fan groups, I've always been interested. So are they all kind of connected? Is there some national group that oversees it, or is it really loose?
Yeah, no, Sony Ghost Corps. You actually get registered.
Oh, interesting.
I have, I don't think I can get to it. It's hanging up on the wall somewhere behind me.
Mm-hmm.
It's a, you know, like a certificate. I have it like framed and everything from Ghost Corps. Yeah, they actually sanction. I mean, it works for them. We're free advertising for them. Like, it's crazy. Yeah, we help keep it alive in the public.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the peripheral, you know, we know Ghostbusters, but like, you know, Tom that works at the bank who doesn't, you know, he doesn't know, you know what I mean? He doesn't.
Yeah.
He is a thing he remembered from seeing 40 years ago. So, you know, he sees like guys dressed up and they have an Ecto-1, you know, it kind of pops it back in their head. And, you know, new movie comes out or cartoon or something, they're more, you know, inclined to check it out.
So there's guidelines you need to stick to, I'm assuming. Like, don't charge for your appearances.
Yeah. Charity. It's all charity.
Yeah.
And I'm sure every chapter has their own set of rules because we have, like, you know, we have background checks in New York City Ghostbusters.
Okay.
Yeah. Because you never know. You're working around kids and
That's
stuff.
True.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I'd rather it be above board if I'm part of it, you know, to be honest.
That makes sense.
I don't want my name associated to anything, like, come on, like, you know?
Right. And so the 40th anniversary event's coming up in New York, too. They're going to do a big thing at the firehouse.
It's going to be wild. Yeah, I'm doing the art print for that right now.
Nice.
I'm actually just wrapping it up.
Nice.
And, if you come down to that, if you're in New York City June 8th, at noon, you go to the New York City Ghostbusters Firehouse. That's at 14 North Moore Street, the corner of North Moore and Verrick.
But yeah, you were saying there's going to be guests there. There's going to be you're doing an art print.
Yeah. So yeah, if you plan on going, try to get there by noon when it starts because I'm giving away the art print. I think it's only going to be like 150 or 200 like available. It's free. You see me. I'll be dressed like Jake Blues. You'll get one for free as long as I'm, you know, I still have them.
Right.
And they go quick. Last year, they went insanely quick. So they have him. They have John Rothman. He's going to be there. You know, he played the in the original Ghostbusters and in Frozen Empire, played the library guy.
Right.
What has that got to do with it, that guy? Yeah, we got the cop. You do your job, pencil neck. Don't tell me how to do mine. That guy. The Alessi brothers, who sing the song Saving the Day.
I love that song.
Dude, they were there last year. Dude, they did they set up in front of the firehouse. I'll send you a video.
Uh-huh.
It was like, they did the song. It was wild. I got a picture with them. They signed my album and everything. I was like,
that's awesome.
These guys, I don't know. The Mad Splatter, I think they're out of Philly or out of Buffalo.
Okay.
Their band, the big Ghostbusters fans. Yeah, I don't know, just I
Philadelphia
guess,
band.
Get out there, rock
nice.
It out. And one of the guys, Dan from the Buffalo Ghostbusters, who puts this together, he actually just told me, he was like, I can't wait to tell you something that's going to, you know, be going down. I'm going to let you know tomorrow. He's like, pay attention at noon tomorrow. It's going to be a big announcement.
Oh, man.
I'm psyched to hear what you think. I was like,
nice.
All right, man. Yeah, I'm in.
That's exciting. Yeah, I wish I could make it out. We were like looking at what summer vacation trips we could make and landed on Florida, and it actually happens like on that date. So
You know what? It's a lot for one day.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's hard to justify a whole trip for one day. So I get it. But you know, I live right there, like firehouse. If I drive to the firehouse, it's like 40 minutes from my house.
And they've got the sign hanging properly now.
Yeah, they got the sign up properly, which that's I'm happy great. To see. Yeah, I haven't seen it. The last time I was up at the firehouse was in March, and they had it decked out for Frozen Empire. Mm-hmm. So they had like the fake ice and everything. So I didn't even get to see it like proper with my own eyes. Right. But yeah, it's a cool thing. Like I said, they have some, you know, people appearing in Ghostbusters, and they have some of the music there, and they're also going to have the walking tour, where it's the location tour. So it goes all around Manhattan. Like you jump on the train to different parts, and you go to like different locations: the New York Public Library, the building that's subbed in from the Manhattan Museum of Art from from Ghostbusters 2. It's the Museum of Native American history or something like that. Mm-hmm. I don't remember. And there's you go up by the Gozer, the Shandor building up on Central Park West, and Tavern on the Green where Lewis runs into. You go up by there. It's like it's all over the place. It's really cool. Yeah. Oh, and there's Ectos. People just bring their Ectos. People come from all over the country, different Ecto ones.
Yeah, really, we had one out here in Chicago for the Wonderverse opening. I think it was the one. I think it was a New Jersey one.
Oh, the New Jersey guy. Yeah. Ecto. Yeah.
Yeah. So I went out there and looked at that. He's that was wild. Yeah, but it's kind of great that they're having a resurgence. I don't know when or if there's going to be another movie, but I mean, we should be thankful that we've gotten. I mean, the fact that Ghostbusters 4 happened so quickly after 3, when 3 was like never going to happen, is just wild to me.
It was in like development hell since the 90s.
Right.
Like Dan Aykroyd was trying to get that off the ground. There's like, I'd give anything to read that whole script, that Ghostbusters 3 Hellbent script.
Yeah.
That he wrote. Is that one? And also, I'd love to read that one that Gene Stubinsky and the other guy, I forgot the guys who did like Year One with Harold Ramis.
Yeah.
Like the guys who did like a bunch of episodes of The Office and everything, they wrote a third Ghostbusters, like under like, you know, assignment by Harold Ramis.
Wow.
Yeah. And then Year One bombed so hard it killed it.
God, yeah.
Yeah. It killed everything about that. But yeah, there was a script written. It was like, it's out there.
Oh, that's wild. I mean, what are your hopes? Are you hoping for a fifth movie? Do you want to see it go somewhere else, like cartoons again, or?
I'm always going to say yes. I want a new cartoon. But I don't have faith in modern animation, to be honest. Modern television animation,
right?
I mean, I haven't checked out any of X-Men 97 yet, and that's just because I just have not had the time. I'm dying to. I'm a big fan of the original. I heard that is, you know, right on the money. But everything else, man, I'm not into like a lot of CG. Outside of like what Lucasfilm does, I'm not into a lot of just like CG cartoons. I want hand drawn. You know, I know we're not gonna get that. I know you're not gonna get a hand drawn Ghostbusters cartoon.
No, it's gonna be CG. Yeah.
Yeah. 100%. You know, and there's, you know, the there's always the chance it goes like, and this isn't a knock,
right?
It's a knock on the style, like Teen Titans Rise. Even though I do love Teen Titans, the comedy of it, but like it does set that precedence for that chibi, like Rise of the Turtles, Thundercats, all these things they try to like that Steven Universe style. Which it works for some things. I'm not knocking it really. Like it works for certain things. Just Thundercats, really? That works? That's what you think of? You know what I mean? Like I it runs the risk of hitting that.
Yeah.
You know, I know some people might hate me. I think that Rise of the Ninja Turtles does have a fan base. It's just it's not for me.
Yeah, I could see that. I could see them going that direction. But
and, you know, it's not like I'm scared of new Ninja Turtles. I loved Mutant Mayhem. But, you know, I just think a television cartoon series is going to be rank. It's going to stick. It's going to be butt. Big old
I mean,
butt.
We could be surprised. Maybe they're looking at X-Men 97 and they're like, you know what? Let's bring back real Ghostbusters and tell new stories.
I hope. I mean,
that
would be pretty sick. I've been proven wrong before. I wouldn't mind. When it's something I love, I do not mind being proven wrong when I'm being negative about it.
And then the phone call comes, and they're like, we need someone to work on this show.
Oh, I wish.
Yeah.
I wish. We need you to clean our bathrooms and mop the floor, Chris.
Well, you'll be there.
I would, no matter what.
As far as like stuff to plug as we near the end of the show, there's art prints on your website. There's t-shirts.
Yeah.
I own quite a few of the art prints.
Yes. I'll send you the, don't tell anybody else. I'll send you the, exclusive, Ghostbusters Day One.
Oh, thank you.
Nobody else.
Thank you.
You got it.
I absolutely love them, though. This one's just iconic. This one, I think, blew up the Dirt Farm.
Yeah. That kind of put me on the map a little bit.
I love that one. And then of course, you have the latest one here, the Frozen Firehouse. You said this was a reworking of one that you had in progress.
Yeah, so I had done a piece of the Ghostbusters Firehouse, with the containment unit exploding and the beam, going up to the roof. And, like I said, everything I work is on layers. Like I pull things. It's like, you know what? I could rework this into a Frozen thing. Once the trailer hit, I came out with that.
And then this one's such a deep cut.
Yes. So that's with the broken tip and everything. That's from Casper, the 1995 live action Casper movie. Christina Ricci.
And he's got the mustache too. It's just
That was when 1995 or whenever they were filming this movie, I guess maybe probably 94. Dan Aykroyd was simultaneously filming Exit to Eden with Rosie O'Donnell, and
that's
he was sporting that sweet stance mustache, and he had it for that weird cameo in Ghostbusters.
That's so funny. Yeah, it's just like Harrison Ford having that beard in his young Indiana Jones. It's like, I'm not shaving it. At least they didn't CG it out. That would have been.
No, yeah, that would have been really bad.
Or they put fake skin over it.
He's just got a real lumpy face.
What was he making? The Fugitive?
Yeah, he was making The Fugitive at the time.
Right.
Yeah, which is such... That movie holds up, man. I watched it recently. I was like, oh, this movie still holds up. That's a great movie, man. That might have been 94 also.
This is some great art, too. Like, I got to tell anyone who's interested in your stuff, go over to your website and pick these up. You can go to chrisjsorrentino.com, and then there's a link tree, too, that they can get from your socials, too.
Yeah, you can find all that. Or even you go to pizzaplasm.com, or just Google Real Ghostbusters. you'll find me.
Oh, and there's a ton of shirts, too.
Yeah. So these are through TeePublic.
Mm-hmm.
You just give them the design, and they print on demand, so I don't have to, like, deal with, sending shirts out to people. And you see nothing. Like, I'm not even kidding. I don't know what they charge. I think, like, normally, like, $22, but then they always have sales, like, 35% off. Like, if you don't see a sale, if you want one of these shirts and you don't see a sale, just wait a week. You'll see the sale by the shirt. I make like $2 off every shirt. It's disgusting. But I want people to be happy and have my stuff, and I don't want to fucking, put more time into my life mailing things to people.
Right. And you want to beat the bootleggers too, to be honest.
You
want to
beat the bootleggers. And also, I don't want to sit on like 1,000... Like, I've been in bands my whole life. I was a sketch comedy troupe. Like, I have sat on boxes of t-shirts, unsold t-shirts, forever. I could probably clothe all of the homeless in New York City with all of the t-shirts
And you know what happened too? You'd say, "Oh, I bought 50 of Ray. I got 50 of Peter. I bought 50 of Winston, and now I'm just sitting on 50 Winston shirts." That's what's
yeah, exactly. It's like I bought 50 size small Winstons.
Because that's my target right now. It's 4 Fright Feature Winstons just on the peg. No one else. And Winston was my favorite of the Fright Features. It was the first one I owned of those. I only had him for years, and then I had to later go out and get the other ones. But
I have to say Ray was my favorite because he had the Ecto goggles.
Yeah.
And that was from the movie.
Yeah, I have this one sitting next to me.
Yeah, the Peter one, that's a great one.
The weirdest, he's going fishing, but he is going fishing. It's like he's got, because he's got a fishing, it's the weird, like the weirdest concept.
They had the weirdest weapons. I remember Janine's had one that was like a big comb, and her ghost came with hair, and you're like, this is how you're going to bust the ghost? You're going to comb it? You're going to comb its hair?
Maybe that's the next Ghostbusters movie. They're going to be Winston's, tech garage, and he's like, we have new ways of busting ghosts. This ghost is made of hair. We're going to comb it, you know, and be like, oh.
See, I was thinking they have, a ghost barbershop movie, and they're just cutting ghost hair, and then, a ghost walks in, and they're talking shit, and the ghost, and it's just, four old guys cutting, well, I guess 3 old guys cutting hair. Yeah. Talking shit to each other while ghosts are getting their haircuts.
Well, that's the Ghostbusters pop-up books. If you've ever seen those, the real Ghostbusters pop-up books, they bust ghosts, but the ghosts are there. I think there's 3 of them, 3 or 4 of the books. But one of them is a ghost that just wants to take a shower, and because he's like, I'm dirty, I need a shower, and they're like, and then
I'm
and
dirty
then,
boy,
yeah, and then the other one is a ghost that just wants to work out. He's like, I'm fat. I need to work out. And they're like, oh, well, we'll burn off some of the ghost fat with our we'll adjust the settings. And he goes, oh, thanks. I'm thin now. Thank you. It's the weirdest. They're the weirdest books. Yeah. And then another one's a ghost that's just haunting a little boy and making his life terrible.
Really? And it's,
yeah. They're really weird. The birthday ghost, the health club ghost, and the shower ghost or something.
That's
look
wild.
Them up. They're the weirdest books.
I am a very big real Ghostbusters connoisseur. I've never heard of those.
They're the weirdest, and they don't even bust the ghosts. They're just like, oh, you got to lose some weight. So yeah, I mean, maybe that's the direction they're going with
it. Yeah, they went for more pacifistic, ways of dealing with spirits and ghosts.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, Chris, thank you so much for hopping on.
I really appreciate it. I love your art.
I love hearing about how you make it. I love everything about you. So I'm looking forward to seeing what else you got coming up next. And you've already talked. People can see you at the New York 40th anniversary firehouse party going on June 8th. Mm-hmm. Do you have anything else coming up? I mean, you got some secret projects, but...
Yeah, you know what? Just, go to superliveadventure.com and listen to us, John Zaluga and I. It's really funny. It's bizarre. You might like it. If it's for you, you'll love it. Let's just put it that way. If it's not for you, you might be like, whatever, I gave it a shot. But if it's for you, you're going to fucking love it.
Yeah.
And that's it. Just and check out the, check out just my socials, stuff that's going on. I do some live gigs here and there. I do, weird artwork besides Ghostbusters, just weird stuff. Yeah. Put out weird videos here and there. I'm just a weird guy. I like weird stuff and funny, weird, farts.
It's, you've got an eclectic mix of things, but they're all great. I love them all. So thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm glad she kept it together the whole time.
Yeah. And we'll see you next time on the Sagabit Swingin' Report show. We've got some other shows planned, but in the meantime, we'll see you on Sega Talk. We've got Virtua Cop coming up, so see you then. And I've never had a sign off, so bye.
Peace.
Oh,
The SegaBits Swingin' Report Show is a production of SegaBits. SegaBits is a fan site that is not in any way officially affiliated with Sega. Sonic the Hedgehog and all Sega-related trademarks are copyright Sega. All other featured trademarks are the property of their respective owners. Don't forget to check out SegaBits.com, and you can find us on all major social networks. Just search SegaBits.